David Abramson, help us. Help us a little bit here. Good morning.
Good morning, Howard. Good morning, Zanati.
Morning.
Yeah, so people are saying to me, David, that perhaps I'm a little hysterical, anxious, fearful, I'm fear-mongering, I'm a lefty.
You have little faith.
I think you can quote Matthew or something. I'm quite up on all of my the quotes at the moment because they were thrown at me left, right, and center yesterday. But the truth is, David, we are fearful, and suddenly fear's this thing that we are meant to feel ashamed about. Fear has saved our lives for generations. We're fearful of jumping off buildings. We fear if we don't do stupid things because of fear. So why are we suddenly giving fear such a bad rap?
Well, you know, listen, I've always said that anxiety has got a very bad rap because it can be our best friend.
Anxiety and fear the same thing?
Well, I think we can debate that, but I think anxiety, fear is when anxiety gets to the upper echelons, you know, when you start to, when it starts to overwhelm you. So I think fear, anxiety, we can debate it, but I think for me, you know, when it gets to 9, 10, on that scale, you know, you start to feel completely overwhelmed. And, when you keep it at a 7 or a 6, then, it's manageable.
But it's natural, I would imagine, because that's what all you psychologists do. You make us, you normalize it for us. So it's perfectly natural to feel fear right now because I don't want to feel abnormal. How do we manage it? How do we work out? You know, so many of us are feeling this. We've got kids going back to school, which is very, very scary for parents. And looking at social media, I can see the level of anxiety around this. And I think it's absolutely warranted. I'm fearful about schools opening because I don't think we're going to be able to implement the systems that in theory we'd like to implement. I'm fearful about that. I'm fearful about the people around me that have comorbidities that might have a problem. You know, is this natural? Not natural. How do we deal with it, and how do we know how far to push ourselves?
Well, it's such an individual response. I think for me, that's the most important thing to say. That you know, you might be responding in one way, and your friend or neighbour responding in another. And I think we all crave that predictability. We all want to go back to what we knew. But I think what drives us is, I think, two factors really. One is our personality. Are we more anxious, or are we more pragmatic in our thinking? And obviously, you know, I'm generalizing, but you know, if we break it down to very broad personality types. And then the other thing is personal experience. And we spoke about this last week around reward and consequence. You know, if you're having financial difficulty and you need to start working again, or if you've had a person who close to you who has suffered from corona, or you know, maybe even someone who's passed away, your reality is going to be very different, and it's going to be informed by those experiences. So I think for me it's important that everyone will have a different response. But there are actually a lot of people who are very fearful to leave lockdown. You know, it's interesting how we've adapted to what we, you know, to the lockdown when, you know, we struggled initially. Now we feel safe. This is where we can control things. Things are predictable. So absolutely, to start stepping out and to kind of up the variables. You know, you're going into an environment where there are lots of children, where there are other adults, like school and work. It is very scary because we're not as in control when compared to when we are at home, where we can control so much more of what we interact and who we interact with.
And especially with kids going back, that we can control our kids. We know that the minute we send them out to, and I don't mean control but in the sense that we think we're able to, but because we're not, but in the sense that we can control their exposure to germs, potential germs. Interesting. M says fear could stand for false evidence appearing real. but it could also stand for flipping evidence, always real. So, you know, you're standing in front of a cliff,
and it's a
windy day, you know, that's not false evidence, that's flipping evidence, that's real, always real, because it's in front of you.
And it's been proven for, you know, with this places of worship thing that those are, you know, some of the hotbeds.
Because the spirit overcomes us. And then we dance and stuff. So, okay, not really me, but still, I've heard stories. So, obviously this is a very, very real thing that parents are working through, that people are working through. And maybe what we have to do, and somebody said this to me last night, and I thought it was quite interesting. He said to me, the need to go back to work for financial security is a real need. The need to open places of worship is not necessarily the same level of need. And the need for our kids to go back to school is an interesting debate, because there are parents that will say, well, their kids are doing absolutely fine. But I would imagine from a psychological perspective, there is a need to get our kids back to some form of normalcy. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is this balance, how it can't stay in lockdown, you know, with stringent lockdowns forever, because there are going to be psychological, and there really are psychological and emotional fallout from it. You know, people's anxiety levels are very high. People's mood have definitely dipped. And so there are emotional, psychological consequences, but at the same time, it's a very, very precarious balance, because as we're saying, you know, we have this, you know, the economy needs to run, people need to earn a living, and yet at the same time we have a virus that is potentially fatal for some people. So it's a very, very difficult balance, and I do think, you know, we can be very critical at times of our government and our leaders, but it really is a difficult balance to find, to balance the psychological and emotional well-being, the financial side of people, which then affects the emotional and psychological well-being, and then protecting people from the virus. So it really is a balance. And as I say, I think for me, everyone individually will respond according to their own experience and their own need. And we spoke about that last week, about the confirmation bias, that you'll look for the information that you need to confirm your reality and go with it. And I think what we're going to see is an ebb and flow. You know, when people have, you know, when people do go out into the world now, more generally, like to schools and to work, and if they do experience or come into contact with someone who is ill, or they hear about someone close to them that, you know, God forbid, unfortunately pass away, they're going to then, it's going to up their anxiety levels. And then there will be, I would imagine, a retreat back into more of a lockdown mode. So I think for me, this is going to be, this is not a straight line. I think this is going to be an ebb and flow for everyone according to what they experience as they venture out into the world.
And I guess what's also interesting, and as you're saying it, I'm thinking that we're going to feel different things at different times. And maybe, for example, a couple or parents, when their kids are going off to school, maybe one parent might be more anxious at another time. And I guess that's the job of the other person, is just to try and keep things in perspective, because it isn't going to be that straight line. It's not going to be simple. We are going to be dealing with things. And I was I watched the King David webinar and the other day, and I spoke to Rabbi Kasef yesterday about, and one of the things that really stuck with me, aside from a puffer jacket, which I don't know what that is, but was the fact that the one head of schools had tried to wear her mask for a couple of hours and found herself becoming so anxious because she just wasn't used to wearing a mask for that amount of time. So things like that, that there are going to be things we haven't anticipated that our kids are going to battle with and that they're going to worry about, and that is not going to be easy. Things that we can't really anticipate, because we can't anticipate everything, and we are going to have to deal with these things from an anxiety, fear, and negativity space.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, we don't know what, you know, the difficulties that adults and children are going to experience, but I think for me it's about being open to being aware of them and then dealing with them. And I'm sure you've seen that, you know, that kind of description going around. They call it the Corona coaster. You know, you just don't know how you're going to feel. In the morning, you might feel, wow, this is fantastic. You know, I get to stay in bed a little bit longer. It's very cold out. I can start work maybe a little later. I'm with my kids. And then by lunchtime, you're feeling something very, very different. And I think the same's going to happen on a macro scale as we move forward with schooling and work. And it is a moving target. I mean, as we've seen from week to week, you know, information has changed. And week says, you know, we're saying scientific information about coronavirus, and the next week that scientific information has changed. So I think for me, this is really about adaptability, and us really just playing the cards that we dealt with from day to day, which does then encourage anxiety, because, you know, as we've said a lot and people are saying, which is absolutely true, we do thrive of unpredictability, and right now we don't have that predictability. But
it's so interesting because
for me,
I
was going to say that. So I think for me, what could help is to understand that things are predictably unpredictable. You know, we need to know that it is going to be unpredictable, and try and you know, hold on to those things that we can predict and that we can control. But things generally right now, we must be aware and realistic that things are going to move very quickly, and that they will be unpredictable. Expect it.
David, when we come back, I want to ask you Ian's question. He says, how do we manage our children's lack of social interaction, their social interaction needs, which aren't necessarily going to be resolved when they go back to school? David Abramson, psychologist in a private practice. He's joining us, and we're talking about all things fearful. Oh gosh, Zanati.
What is happening now? What are your listeners saying?
No, your listeners are telling me, Zanati, that you forgot Louis Compass's fourth question. No, because we got very busy. It got very, very busy here, didn't it?
It did.
Okay, what has been won by Australia twice and America three times? All right, let's take a look at what your answers are. I've got to scroll all the way back to yesterday, basically. Okay, here we go. America's Cup, says Colin S. Other Colin says a yachting race. A few answers around that. The answer is, according to Louis Karpus, it is the America's Cup yacht race. So there we go. Zanati, next time, please.
I'll remind you.
David, we were talking about Ian's question, and he wanted to know from us, how do we manage our children's lack of social interactions, their need for social interactions, which aren't necessarily going to be resolved once they go back to school?
Yeah, listen, it's not an ideal situation at the moment because we are restricted. And I think that's, you know, that's interesting because, you know, kids, and especially teenagers, you know, used to just, oh, and still do, and I think it's absolutely imperative that they use their social media to keep in touch with their friends. And even the youngsters, you know, when they're playing games, you know, if you allow your child to play Fortnite or Roblox, you know, they can actually communicate with their friends. And I think that's the best that we have right now. But it's interesting how even the teenagers are saying, I miss my friends. I want to interact with them face to face. So that is a reality. And I think at the moment it's very, very difficult because, you know, when we are in such high levels of lockdown, the restrictions are very tight. But I do think that was part of the motivation to go back to school, certainly for the young grades, not the matrix, not the academic reasons for going back, is for that social side. It's very important. And even though it is only going to be one day a week for some, it's going to be better than nothing, and it certainly will be a move in the right direction. Any face-to-face interaction is going to really, I think, improve our kids' kind of social, psychological and emotional well-being. So not ideal, but it's certainly a move in the right direction. And hopefully as the lockdown levels move lower, you know, there'll be maybe, you know, abilities to interact at a social distance, you know, meet people. But, you know, we can hear that people are struggling, and I've heard of a couple of situations where parents have allowed sleepovers, you know, currently because their kids are really struggling.
They just wanted to get rid of their kids, David. No, it is absolutely true. You know what? I'm not judging, but I am. If you want to, if you feel your kid needs some form of social interaction, and it's that desperate that you need to break the rules and have a play date, then surely during the day when the sun is shining and they can be outside and play is just a little bit more responsible than a sleepover. Not that I'm judging.
I am judging.
I am judging.
You know what? I'm owning this. I am judging.
Own it. You're judging, and I think you're right. Because I think for me that is, as you say, I think that is a little bit of a step too far. Definitely a step too far. But that's, you know, I think the point being, and that goes to the question of the, you know, of the listener, is that, yeah, parents are feeling it. Parents are feeling that, you know, that claustrophobia, that overwhelming feeling of having the kids around for so much time, and the kids feeling so isolated. Certainly not recommending that kind of solution. But absolutely, that's why I think for me, going back to school, definitely for the younger grades and for the lower grades in high school, it's not for academics. They don't really need to go back for academic reasons. I think the online learning for most schools is going well. But certainly for that little bit of contact and face-to-face interaction.
Interesting. Melinda says a grade three teacher said that the worst part of this is not being able to hug her students. And I'm sure that is a very, very real thing, especially in the younger grades. The kids are affectionate to the teachers. I mean, I don't know if we still allow to do that in this age of all sorts of stuff. I hope we are still allowed to do that because you know, in a healthy world, there's nothing wrong with that. But in my view, but it must be hard for teachers and students, for the kids, the little ones in particular.
Very hard, because again, you know, and that was the concern about little kids going back, because it's a natural response to play together, you know, and I think that was the you know, the thinking behind it, is that, you know, there will be difficulty, and it will be very almost impossible to keep kids apart, younger kids apart, because that's their natural inclination. But again, balancing that out with that emotional, psychological need, you know, to be with their friends. And we know that younger kids, you know, we're talking about the grade R's, the nursery school kids, even the grade ones in the earlier grades, learn from play. You know, that's how they learn. They learn more from interacting with their friends socially than they do often in the classroom. So absolutely, it's a fine line and a difficult balance. But I think for me, you know, schools have made the decision, or the government's made the decision, that, that it's now got to a point where it's hopefully safe enough to go back, and balancing that with, the amount of time that kids have been in lockdown and have been isolated from their friends.
Melinda says parents are also living on their last nerves. They're in survival mode, clinging to some form of sanity. And I think that is right. I don't think we can underestimate, you know, I keep saying that I can see the strain with older kids. I can hardly imagine what it is for parents of younger children to have had this extended period of lockdown.
No, absolutely overwhelming. I mean, kids are getting up early, just needing a lot of attention, and especially the younger kids don't have that structured kind of work that the older kids, even in the primary school, have. It is a 24/7 job. I'm sure it feels that way. And I'm seeing a lot of parents showing signs of lockdown fatigue, where they are feeling absolutely just feeling tired all day, feeling, you know, this grogginess, and definitely has to do with this relentless, ongoing, you know, situation where they are teacher, parent, and worker. So it's very hard to carry all three hats for long periods of time. So I think going back to school, Again, you know, we can always, you know, say, of course, we need to balance the health side of things. It's very important. Of course, life and death, there's no argument. But certainly from a psychological, emotional point of view, we mustn't forget that if we don't allow people to go out and children to play a bit and to ease the lockdown, you know, the psychological and emotional consequences are also huge. And we're starting to see that people, as I say, their anxiety levels are going so high, and their levels of and their mood is lowering. So even though it doesn't seem to be a life and death situation, it can lead to that, where people actually start to feel suicidal, start to feel depressed. So I think it's important that that's kept in mind as well.
Yeah, interesting indeed. What's your thought about Schulz?
Schulz is a debate, you know, how it depends again on you. Well, listen, I was thinking, are you going to turn away that 51 person from Schulz? I'd like to.
Well, I just, you know, the way I concretize it is I wonder how they're going to turn my father away. He's 83. He should not be outside of his house, let alone at a Schulz with amount of comorbidities. And he loves Schulz. Now, who is going to have the job of turning him away because he shouldn't be there?
Yeah.
And if any shul can answer that, then and that honestly answer it, that they are prepared to send my father home.
Yeah.
I mean, and good luck to them. Then maybe they can open. If they can't answer that question, they can't open. It's as simple as that, because there are hundreds of my fathers.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I suppose the logic behind it, and I'm only assuming, is that places of worship are places where one can go and feel closer to God and to feel more contained, and a place where one can, to a degree, within limits, socialize a little bit more. But absolutely, you know, there are certainly are depending on people making decisions that are not going to put their lives at risk. So anyone who has got who is elderly or has a kind of precondition, you know, but exactly how are they going to monitor it? Is it the right of the person at the door to say, you know, you are elderly, sorry, you can't come in?
Yeah, and then maybe that person has yahrzeit and they want to say Kaddish that day. So there's a real reason they need to be there. I just cannot imagine. And then they're not going to allow children onto campus, I would imagine. So if they do open, which makes, of course, perfect sense, who's going to be staying home with their kids? Like, I don't know. Marriages aren't going to survive this, David. They're not going to survive. No.
Well, and I think that a lot of relationships are under strain and stress at the moment. But I think absolutely all these things are so new. We don't know. We've never been here before.
So it will be very interesting.
But hopefully people will use and encourage, like, hopefully, I don't know, you'll encourage your dad not to go back, no matter how much he wants to right now.
Because that's going to work, David. That is going to work, because he is. So Nati spoke to her mother yesterday. She even used very strong, language, trying to convince her not to go back to church. So Nati,
very, very strong language. And honestly, I think just balancing everything here is like dating in your 30s. Honestly, like dating in your 30s, it's like riding a bike and the bike is on fire and the road is on fire and everything is just on fire. It's a lot.
It is, exactly. Well, Melinda says, I have a kid in a preschool with no interest in doing any of the activities that have been sent. So I'm on duty all day. No sight of the little ones going back soon. Sounds like she's about to lose her mind. Karen says, I feel for your father. I'm like him, feeling very isolated at the moment. Men, however, will be allowed to go back before the women. Well, we don't know that, and I'll be outraged. I will, Karen, fight that one for you, because women need to go to shul just as much as men do, even if they don't make up a minion. So I certainly would hope that no shul is foolish enough to say the 50 people that are allowed are all men. Otherwise, you come and tell me about it, and we're going to need to talk about that. Ian says on a line, lighter note, I feel like I'm having the same conversation with my elderly parents as I'm having with my children. They just don't listen.
And they can manipulate.
They are so stubborn. The arguments are the same. I can't live like this forever. I'm so claustrophobic. The challenge is my parents don't live with me, so I have less control over them than my kids. My father, Howard, is like your father. He has no zitzfleiss, like the ability to sit in the same place for a long period of time. Yeah. It is so difficult.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is so difficult. You know what? Payback, you know? When you didn't listen to your parents, now they're not listening to you.
It is true. It is true. I can't tell you I've had a day of listening to my father in my life. So that kind of make sense. It is 8:48. David Abramson, your final, not final, because that sounds so final, your advice on this before we let you go and wish you a Chag Sameach.
Thanks, Howard. You know what? I think for me, we are all in this together. And I think that's the point, is that, you know, we might feel isolated, alone when we're in our houses, and that we all are facing our own individual challenges. But please, I think the point is that we live in a wonderful community, a wonderful country where people, I think genuinely, you know, people say about South Africans, you know, sure, they're just wonderful people. Reach out. Don't feel like you can't speak to other people, because I think you'll be surprised that people are feeling similar things and having the same difficulties. And it's really comforting to know that you're not going mad, that you're not weak or overly anxious, because it's a normal response to the situation. So I would say right now, even though we are seem to be isolated, speak to friends, speak to family, speak, and if not, phone a helpline. Mm. You know, if you don't feel comfortable speaking to opening up to someone close to you. But I think people will be surprised how their responses are so normal. And let's understand that you know, we're going to need to take this thing one step at a time, and that does create a bit of anxiety, sometimes a lot of anxiety, and that's completely normal.
David, I actually am not going to let you go, because I do have an important question from a listener listening in Israel. Please can you ask David, what about us old people at home? We suffer brain fog on steroids. I'm feeling very isolated, which we are. Yes. Don't know where the days go, what day of the week it is, etc.
Yes. It's very difficult. And I think for me, that's the thing, is to try and create some kind of structure to your day. And I know it sounds like that's been bandied around a lot, but I think creating a structure to your day, finding interests, finding things to do is very important, but also, you know, reaching out to, to people via technology. And I know sometimes, I'm being very careful here, because I know that some, older people are very good at technology, but some aren't. But to really try and use the phone, use FaceTime to interact with people as much as possible. But very, very important is to try and create some kind of structure to your day, where it's not just going from hour to hour.
Mm. And I think that is, I think structure in the day is very, very important. Waking up, knowing what time you're eating breakfast, getting dressed, reading something, maybe going for a walk, or doing some form of exercise.
Absolutely.
I think that structure is absolutely critical. 8:51 now, I am going to let you go, David. Have a Chag Sameach, a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you,
for your invaluable advice. It is 8:51. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.